Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are God's, little g. You are God's because you came from God.
When I read in the Bible where he says, I am, I just smile and say, yes, I am too.
God came from heaven, became a man, made man into little gods.
We have the potential and the capacity through a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ to know God, but that does not mean we are God. The Bible is very clear. There is only one God, and he will not share his glory with another.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Welcome in to Witness Wednesday here on Wretched Radio. I am Jimmy Hicks. Nope, I am not Todd Friel, but you are most definitely going to be hearing from Todd Friel. He is out on the campus at Oklahoma State University this week. And typically what we normally do is give you interactions he has with college students on the campus as he shares the gospel. This week, however, we're going to let you listen in to his presentation that he gave at Oklahoma State before he took questions from the students. Now, we will have some questions, a few questions from students a little bit later on, but I want you to hear this full presentation because, honestly, it's worth listening to. It's worth hearing, not just for those people who are student-aged, but for each and every one of us. This is prevalent in evangelicalism right now, and it is worth our consideration. So let's get out to the campus of Oklahoma State University. It's a Witness Wednesday on Wretched Radio.
Let's talk about y'all. You've been breathing cultural air since you've been born. You maybe don't realize it, but whether it's social media, whether it's a Disney movie, whether it is some churches, most certainly in university classrooms, you have been drinking in the philosophical air of our time, which is postmodernism, but I'd actually call it something a little bit different. I'd say that it is expressive postmodernism. And even if you don't realize that you might be somehow imbibing some of their ideas, they're getting into your pores because every culture has a bit of an attitude throughout the generations when it comes to the issue of truth. And right now, the postmodern era says that truth is defined by the individual. That's the video that we were seeing. This is going to be a tour of, if you will, expressive postmodernism. Now, if you'd like to understand the history of philosophy, it can be boiled down to a baseball game. In the pre-modern era, that's going to be the time from the cross of Jesus Christ. He's the one who flipped the calendar from BC to AD. From that time, basically, to about 1400, give or take, if God said it, if the Bible said it, that settles it. We're not going to debate it. That's it. The authority for truth is divine. That was overall the attitude of Western civilization for that many centuries. But the empirical season entered. An individual started to question the existence of God. Should we be believing in the Bible? They determined that man has the answer. We determine what is true. Well, that worked out for a bit of time, but then it ultimately was revealed as being unsustainable because it led us to World Wars I and World Wars II. And so what happened? We decided that there's no God, so he doesn't determine truth. We failed as a collective in determining the truth. What is truth? It is what you, the individual, decides it is. So in the pre-modern era, if you're a baseball umpire, you call them as they are. During the empirical era, from like 1400, the age of reason, to about the 20th century, the early 20th century, if you're a baseball umpire, you call them and that is what they are. Postmodernism, the umpire would say, he calls them and that's what they become. Do you feel the difference? We determine what is truth, but something happened along the way. Some new philosophers entered into the arena of thought, and they introduced ideas like, from Jean-Jacques Rousseau, that you're in chains. You as an individual, you're in shackles. And who has put you there? Your parents. Mostly the church, in his instance, it would be the Roman Catholic Church, and it's keeping you from expressing yourself. And so he introduced this idea that what is on the inside needs to be expressed on the outside. And the bravest thing that you can possibly do is express yourself. Live your authentic life, your truth. Now, that goes back almost 300 years. But there were others who contributed to it. The Romantics, in response to the empirical age, they asked the question, what about our feelings? Along the way, you've got existentialists, Camus, you've got postmodernity, you've got psychiatrists like Sigmund Freud, who said, the most important thing about you is your sexual proclivities and your sexual activities. And you really need to have permission. You've got to break those shackles and you've got to express your sexuality any way that you choose to. You've got the transcendentalists, the sexual revolution hits in the 60s, which separated the procreative act from the procreative consequences. In other words, go do your thing. You can act like dogs in heat. Don't worry, we'll take care of the consequences of that activity via abortion or the pill or birth control. Those thoughts, along with postmodernity, which predominantly came out of France with guys like Foucault, Derrida, who said that truth is determined by the individual. All of those ideas were swirling in a pot. And today it reveals itself in what I call expressive postmodernity, where the most important thing about you is how you are feeling. And you do not conform to society. Society has to conform to you. You don't do what the church says, what your parents say. You don't do what society says. You do what feels good and right to you. And society needs to applaud that. And because this is a paramount part of our personages, this is the most important thing, that I can live any way that I want to. If somebody disagrees with you, they've committed a crime. That's why words are weapons. They actually commit a crime. It's so offensive. It's such an assault on your psyche that somebody would disagree with you. And now, just if I could, as an aside, you're being fed that a lot these days. You hear the word toxic people. Everybody's a narcissist. And therefore, you got to put up boundaries, draw them around you. And a lot of students are doing that with their parents. A lot of women, predominantly, the number one New York Times bestseller, Let Them Theory. It's all about those boundaries. If anybody disagrees with you, just let them go. Let them think whatever they want to, so that you can do the most noble act there is and be yourself. You define what is true. That's the air that you've been breathing. Pretty much every Disney movie has that theme. You've been hearing it in lyrics and in songs throughout the... This goes back, I think it was in the 70s. Debbie Boone was singing the song. How can this affair be so wrong when it feels so right? If I feel right about it, it is right. Now, you might think, I've grown up in a Christian home. I have not been reading philosophy. I have not been drinking in that Kool-Aid. But the reality is, it's been splashing all over you. And as a part of that is a big movement called deconstructionism. It's happening in virtually every realm in culture, where you deconstruct it. You deconstruct literature, you deconstruct art, you deconstruct architecture, systems, government, genders, sexuality. It all needs to be destroyed and brought down to rubble. Why? So that you can build up society in your own image. That is the era that you're living in. And that is why on campus, we're seeing an increasing number of people, Christians, who come to campus and they deconstruct their faith. Why? Because they're encouraged to do that in the classroom. Maybe you've experienced that. Has the professor come at you for being a Christian? If you're a Christian here tonight, they probably come at you in order to encourage you to deconstruct your faith. Sometimes young Christians come to campus and their faith is maybe a little wobbly. They've been looking forward to the university experience, so they kind of live that university experience and they get thrown into turmoil because their behavior on weekends at the frat party, it's just in a different alignment than their Christian faith. And so they try to figure out a way, how can I get away from feeling guilty and shameful because I'm not doing it the way that my parents taught me? And they go about the business of deconstructing the faith. Furthermore, you've got a number of students on campus, they just want to reject Christianity outright. And I think when we remember expressive postmodernism, when we remember deconstructionism and what motivates this rejection of the Christian faith, I think it's really easy to understand what's going on. So if you're a Christian and you know somebody who's thinking about deconstructing, or you're a Christian and you are deconstructing, this is for you. If you are not a Christian, I'm going to encourage you to rethink Christianity, because it is my opinion that in virtually every single case of deconstruction, rejection of Christianity is Don Quixote. You remember the literature Don Quixote? Was written in about 1605. It was written as this allegory of a nobleman. He become fixated with what is noble and what is righteous deeds and activities. And he went crazy, is what he did. And so he changed his name to Don Quixote, and he dressed up as a knight, and he went out onto the landscape. He hired a peasant farmer. He hired a guy to just bring along and be his assistant. And he went looking to rescue damsels in distress, to make right what was wrong. He didn't find it. But in his madness, what did he do? He tilted at windmills. He saw the windmills and he went after them. And he thought that they were the real thing, but they weren't. And that's the thesis of this brief presentation before we get to Q&A. If you're deconstructing or you're rejecting Christianity, my premise is you've been tilting at windmills. You have not really been deconstructing the reality. You've been deconstructing something that you've been told, something you've seen on the internet, but it isn't the truth.
All right, quick break. We've got to take this break, but we will be back with more of Todd's presentation. I know I hate interrupting him just as much as you hate for me to interrupt him, but we have to pay a few bills. We'll be back with more from Witness Wednesday on Wretched Radio. You know what's annoying? Everyone acts like you should just automatically know how to be a man. Like it's supposed to be obvious or something. And then when you're struggling with temptation or you don't know what you're supposed to be doing with your life, they just say, hey, try harder, pray more. Yeah, I'll do that. Okay, thanks for nothing. Well, Dr. Adam Tyson is actually doing something. He's going to tell you the truth, 5 steps to becoming a man after God's own heart. Dr. Tyson's going to give you real answers from the Bible, not cliches, not go figure it out for yourself, but actual steps that will tell you and teach you how to fight sin with Scripture, how to live with purpose instead of just reacting to whatever happens. Here's the best part. He's going to start with the gospel, so you're not trying to earn God's approval. You're going to be living from His approval. It's on Fortis Plus on demand. You can watch whenever you want at Fortis Forum with Dr. Adam Tyson. And it's free because Fortis Plus is free. Hey, if you're tired of guessing what manhood looks like, just go watch it right now. FortisPlus.org. FortisPlus.org. Your son asked to use your cell phone yesterday, and for just a split second, your heart stopped. And it wasn't because of what you thought he might find. You're careful about that, but because of what you knew he wouldn't find. Evidence of a man actually living for Christ. See, our kids don't care about our Sunday morning Christianity. They watch us when we think no one's looking. They notice when Dad disappears into his office and locks the door. What if your son could actually see a father who's genuinely free? A dad whose private life matches up with his public faith. That's not a fantasy, it's an actual reality, because men experience that transformation every day when they stop trying to manage their sin and let Christ kill it instead. Todd Friel's Play the Man shows you exactly how that works. There's no gimmicks, there's no quick fixes. It's just full of biblical truth about how God transforms men. Play the Man by Todd Friel. It's available right now as an audiobook, an ebook, and video series only at FortisPlus.org. Hey, look, some battles, they're just too important to lose. Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Look, here's something that I've noticed, and maybe you have too, but it's really easy for us to treat our faith sometimes like a category. As Sunday is Sunday. Work is work. Parenting is parenting. And somewhere in there, you try to be a Christian, but it doesn't always feel like it's all connected. That's why Dr. John Krotz and his podcast Integrated is so incredibly important. Dr. Krotz is a pastor. He's an author. He's a biblical counselor, and he's a Fortis Institute fellow and the host of Integrated, and he is helping people see how Scripture speaks to every part of their life. Not just the spiritual stuff, but the practical, everyday, how do I actually live this stuff out stuff. And if what we're doing at Fortis Institute has been a source of encouragement for you, I want to ask you to consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Help us continue producing content just like Integrated that connects the dots. Go to FortisInstitute.org right now and find out how to join us. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Books of the Bible. The book of Revelation describes visions given to the Apostle John by Jesus Christ concerning the consummation of history. Its symbolic style makes Revelation a mystery to many, but you can understand much by asking what are the setting and action and who are the characters. When you wonder how it's all going to end, God has given Revelation just for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And we are back. It's a Witness Wednesday on Wretched Radio. I'm Jimmy Hicks in the studio. Todd has been talking about deconstruction on the campus of Oklahoma State University. I wanted you to hear that entire presentation because I believe that it's worth your time and consideration. Let's get back to it now.
Anybody remember Plato's allegory of the cave? And the idea is, if you can see the screen, that there's people, the guy's sitting down, he's in chains, he's in shackles, he can't get out. He's been there his whole life with a number of other people. They've never been outside. Behind them is that lower wall with a flame behind, way behind the individual who's carrying the bird. So of course the light puts the reflection of the bird onto the wall. The guy in chains sees it and he thinks that's reality. And so his entire life shadows our reality. Well, finally, one of the people that was chained in this cave, they escape. They go out and they see reality. They try to come back in and explain, this ain't real. This is not the actual thing. You've got to come see it. They thought he was crazy. And so just like Sancho Panza, who was the squire for Don Quixote, and just like the individual who broke free from the cave, now, that's the role that I would like to play with you tonight and to share with you. If you're deconstructing or considering it or rejecting Christianity, you're deconstructing a shadow. It's not the reality. It's not the real thing. And so in order to do that, let's take a look at syllogisms for a moment. You're familiar with this logistical tactic. The idea is to state a couple of premises and come up with a conclusion. Here's some bad syllogisms. I don't like revolving doors. The Empire State Building has revolving doors. Therefore, the Empire State Building does not exist. Is that a reasonable conclusion? No, it's not. But what we're going to see is that is why a lot of people reject Christianity. They don't like something about it, so they tear it down. But they're not tearing down the reality. They're tilting at a windmill. Yes, there are bad things that happen inside of Christendom, but that doesn't mean that Christ doesn't exist. All right, here's another syllogism for you. I don't like cats. The internet is full of cat videos. Therefore, the internet is a hoax. Reasonable? No. But these are the types of syllogisms that are being employed with Christianity. I get seasick. Australia is surrounded by ocean. Therefore, Australia must be imaginary. I don't trust clowns. The circus has clowns. Therefore, circuses are government propaganda. One more. I'm afraid of heights. Airplanes go high. Therefore, flight was invented by those who want to control us. Have you heard that one about Christianity? Just wants to control us. Okay, what are we seeing here? They're perhaps, we'll examine it. They're seeing something that bugs them. They're seeing something they don't like. So they go after that. Hey, I don't like that. That's not the way that it should be. So they tear it down. They reject it. They deconstruct it. But that's not what Christianity is. Christianity is something that's bigger. Christianity is something that is grander. And just because somebody in Christendom does stuff that we would disagree with, that does not mean that the object of the faith doesn't exist, is oppressive, that wants to steal you and rob you of having fun, or because it's racist or sexist. Now, look, that might be going on inside of Christendom, but that does not determine whether or not Christianity is true or false. We have to look elsewhere to make those decisions. And I've compiled, there are more, but typically there's about 8-10 of these windmills that people tilt against when it comes to deconstruction or rejecting of the Christian faith, give or take. And I think typically they're presented in bad syllogisms. Here's one. White men oppress people. Christianity has a lot of white men. Therefore, Christianity isn't true. Well, that's a horrible syllogism, isn't it? But that's exactly what people do who would say that white men oppress people, white Christian European males, heterosexual ones to boot. They oppress people, they're Christians, therefore Christianity isn't true. That's just illogical. What we have to take a look at is the object of the faith and the source material of the faith, and not what we perceive to be realities. Now, we can have a debate all night if white men oppress people or not. I'm happy to do that if you'd like to ask that question, but that's almost irrelevant when it comes to determining whether Christianity is true or false. Donald Trump is bad. Evangelicals vote for Trump. Therefore, Christianity is false. Now, that's an argument that people have. They don't like Donald Trump. They saw an evangelical embrace of Donald Trump. Therefore, they throw out the baby with the bathwater. It's an illogical syllogism. Christianity is not about Donald Trump. Whether he's a follower or not will be determined in eternity. But he has nothing to do with whether or not Jesus Christ is the divine Son of God who came to this planet, took on human form, fulfilled all righteousness, died on a cross, courtesy of the Roman and Jewish religious leaders, and who resurrected, rose again, and ascended into heaven where he is currently reigning. Donald Trump has nothing to do with that, whether you like him or not. Here's another syllogism that we'll see when it comes to deconstructing Christianity. Religion should be clean from politics. We're very political, those evangelicals. Therefore, Jesus didn't exist. Now, when you see it put together in a syllogism that way, I think it reveals the fallacious nature of the argument. Maybe you don't like evangelical involvement in politics. That I might even join you in that chorus. But that has nothing to do with the reality of the existence of the object of the faith of Christianity. Here's another one. Toxic parents are a drag. My evangelical parents, they were toxic. Therefore, the Bible is wrong. Do you see how wrong that syllogism is? By the way, you're just being told constantly that your parents are toxic. Everybody's toxic. Everybody's a narcissist, and you just need to let them go. They're terrible and what have you. But my question for you would be, what does that really have to do with the Bible? Okay, maybe you say, well, that's hypocrisy. I understand that, but we cannot go about the business of determining if the object of the faith is real based on some of the activities of some of the purported followers of the object of the faith. I think you feel the difference. I like porn, fornication, free love. The Bible disagrees. Therefore, the Bible is false. Why did I throw this one in? Well, pick your sin, whether it's pornography, it's fornication, free love. That tends to be a big one. It's alcohol, it's drugs, it's whatever your flesh craves. You want that so badly. The Bible says, no, that's not what's best for you. Therefore, you do everything you can to tilt against that windmill. Just because the Bible puts some prohibitions on our activity doesn't mean that the Bible is false or that Christianity should be rejected. Here's another one. My truth is all that matters. My truth says Jesus doesn't exist. Therefore, Jesus isn't real. My truth is that that chair is the divine being of the universe. And for all of eternity, that chair is going to sit on me as we sit in a convention hall with other chairs that are lesser chair deities. It's my truth. Question, am I wrong? All right. What I feel about something doesn't make it reality. That's postmodernism. That's expressive postmodernism. I can believe it with all of my heart, but that does not make it reality any more than with all of my heart, I believe that 2 + 2 = 5. It's 4. One more, I think. Try to pay attention to this one. Mistakes render a book unreliable. I think the Bible has mistakes. Therefore, 2,000 years of faithful transmission are invalid. Now, why would I say that's a bad syllogism? Because the truth is, on the face of it, it is a good syllogism. I would agree with that. If a book says this is the divinely inspired, inerrant, infallible word of God, that's what it says about itself, but you perceive there's a lot of mistakes, well, it would undermine its own testimony. I would affirm that. So why do I include it, though, as a bad syllogism? It's because that center line, I think the Bible has mistakes. The question isn't whether we think it has mistakes. The question is, does the Bible have mistakes? Are there errors in that book? Now, we're not going to do a presentation on textual criticism tonight. We're not going to talk about the axiomatic nature of the Bible, that it proves itself to be true, but it does. And all of, if you ever watch videos or your university professor say, hey, take a look in 2 Samuel, it says this number, but over here in 1 Kings, it says that number. Aha, there's a mistake in the Bible. Therefore, you throw the whole thing out. No, there's not a mistake. They have all been explained, I promise you, hundreds of times, hundreds, they've all been explained. You can go find the books online that stack up all of the books. It's a shelf full of books that deal with all of these accusations against the Bible. The issue when it comes to the Bible is not whether or not it's textually accurate, whether it contains errors or not. The issue is one's attitude toward the Bible. They're all explainable. They are, if you want them to be explained.
All right, it is another interruption. I know, you're saying bad things about me, and I don't blame you, but we've got to take another pause for the cause. Back with more from Todd and his presentation from the campus of Oklahoma State University on the topic of deconstruction. It is Witness Wednesday on Wretched Radio.